You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. There is still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790. That's 505-338-5790. Or text 505-585-LIVE. That's 505-585-5483. Today's show is sponsored in part by Ben Lucero at Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700. Or online at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect.
I'm joined in studio now by Pastor Peter Martin. He's an associate pastor at Calvary Christian Fellowship in Tucson, Arizona, with Scott Richards. Of course, our listeners are very familiar with Pastor Scott as he teaches here on KLYT on a daily basis. He's the Pastor Peter is the author of Rooted in Sin, Rescued by Love, and another book called The Fellowship of Suffering. He teaches about issues of Christianity, sexuality, trauma, and hope. And Pastor Peter, we've just been talking for the last 20 minutes before we started here, and I'm hoping you can repeat everything that you said to me in the last 20 minutes.
Try to do it verbatim, yeah.
I love it. Man, I'm so fascinated and so blessed that you're here to talk to us about. Would you start the program by talking to us about your own journey to faith?
Yeah, absolutely. So my parents actually were pretty big in this church with Skip Heitzig back in, you know, 80s. And they came to faith early on in their marriage and moved out to Tucson and helped start the Calvary Tucson with Robert Furrow. And then they also helped plant the church that Scott Richards now goes over, Calvary Christian Fellowship. So I grew up in a very Christian home. Amazing, wonderful parents, great sibling structure. I was the youngest of the family. And it wasn't until I was around 12 or 13 that I started to veer away from Christian thought, and it really became because of this issue of sexual sin. So in my mind, it was much easier to move away from God, from which I felt condemned and I felt ashamed, and to embrace the behavior that I was becoming more and more familiar with and comfortable with, than it was to wrestle with the idea that maybe I need to change, maybe I need to repent, and maybe I need to deal with some of the guilt I'm experiencing. And I didn't want to do that, so I moved away. It wasn't until I was around 16 that I came back to God. It was just those 3 years were pretty miserable in my life, and I recognized my need for God. I came back. But this issue of sexual struggle has been present ever since I was around 12 or 13 years old. I went into the Marines when I was 18, did 4 years there. Came back to the States, came back to Tucson, and I was like, now is the time to start really working on this thing. And so I contacted my pastor, Bo Ouellette, told him what was going on in my life, and he really mentored me, discipled me, helped me work through these issues the best he could. And slowly but surely, I started getting on staff and working in counseling and helping out other guys in this issue.
Peter, I told you this already, and I think this is true even at Calvary Church. I think people are really nervous to talk about sexually charged topics, issues. Mm-hmm. Yet they seem to be more pervasive than any other issue that we're facing. I mean, so that is a paradox that we need to fix.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I was telling you earlier, and I truly believe this, I understand the reticence of why pastors wouldn't want to bring up these issues, because it is true that exposure to these issues will sexualize people and it will cause them to maybe go deeper into it. So we have to address it with the deepest of concern and care. We have to also recognize that if we don't talk about it, people are going to be educated about it one way or the other. So human beings are naturally sexual creatures. That's how we procreate. That's how we develop family structures and things like that. It is one of the primary motivators in our life, especially as men. You know, we're always thinking about these particular issues, maybe not even in a lustful or inherently sinful way, but just in the idea of thinking about prospective partners and thinking about, like I said, starting a family. We tend to structure our career, our lifestyle, everything around this. So to deny the topic altogether and basically just tell people, well, you need to wait till marriage and not address the complexity of it and the nuance of it, I think is really leading people out to the slaughter, because they're going to find this information somehow. And most of them are going to find it in some unsavory and unbiblical context.
You mentioned that you were starting to address these issues when you were 12 or 13 years old. Now, I'm a lot older than you.
Yeah.
And in culture in those days, we weren't faced with sexually charged messages every 2 minutes through social media. We didn't even have social media. In fact, we had rotary telephones, which again, you probably don't know what that is, and neither does my daughter.
I've seen them on TV.
Yeah, you've seen them on TV. So I'm thinking that, I thought girls still had cooties when I was 12 or 13 years old. I wasn't facing with sexual temptation or anything. What were some of the questions you were asking at that time that you ended up going away from God at that time?
Yeah, so, and this is the truth of people at that age and why exposure at that age is not very good, especially the type of material people are exposed to. So, I mean, it's bad enough for someone who's 12 or 13 to just be exposed to nudity at that age, right? To be exposed to graphic or pornographic images at that age. But for the capacity of someone at my time, now it's much more prolific, obviously, but to be exposed to full-on videos of people engaging in all sorts of different types of intercourse, that is something that mentally you're just not really ready to deal with or cope with. There are some people who are a little bit more sexually mature at that age, usually because of early sexualization, but for the most part, people are not intellectually ready. So what happens is the body reacts without the mind understanding what's going on. And so the body begins to shape the intellect, which is the opposite of how it's supposed to happen. So in other words, we're supposed to be exposed to ideas, and this is what education's all about, right? This is why we send our kids to Sunday school and things like that. The mind is educated to prepare for what the body's instincts are going to be. If the body reacts first and then infers the mind, then you become what the Apostle Paul called a carnal Christian. Someone who's run by the body. Later on in Philippians chapter 3, he calls these people saying that they have as a god their belly, right? He's not saying that they're gluttons per se. He's saying that their appetites are what's running the show. So you have these base desires or appetites that become really the thing that's dictating what you're doing. So at 12 or 13, it's not like I was thinking, oh, wow, I wonder if this type of sexual thing that I'm imbibing, this thing that I'm watching, is going to be healthy for me if I'm going to develop relationships like this that are this sexually charged and this ambiguous, meaning that the switching out of sexual partners is very common in pornographic material. So it's not like you're thinking intellectually about it. You're just, your body's reacting and saying, I like this, right? I like the way this makes me feel. I like the way that this looks. But you're not intellectualizing it in any particular way, and that's the danger of it.
Peter, I had a woman tell me recently that her husband, who had committed adultery, actually said to her, men are not made to be monogamous. Mm. And he's a Christian.
Yeah.
And that was his rationalization for his behavior. That's right. Not accurate.
Right. No, it's not. So what you can say is fallen man is not made to be monogamous, but fallen man's also not made to be gentle, kind, honest, with courage or anything like that. What we could say is that the renewed mind, the regenerate man, is made for that. So this is what Paul describes in Ephesians chapter 4, where he talks about the juxtaposition between the old man, what he describes as the flesh, being in conflict with the new man, the new creation that's created in God, in Christ Jesus. And so you could say the old man isn't created for that. And yeah, that's very, very true. But that's why the old man is going to perish. The new man is, right? The new man is to reflect Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ in his spiritual capacity is a monogamous type of deity, meaning that God does not become intimate with varieties of different religious beliefs and affiliations. He is only in, right, via his Holy Spirit, his church, his bride, right? This is why we have that language throughout the scriptures, that we are the bride of Christ. That doesn't mean that there's any sexual facet to our relationship with God, but it does mean that the sexual relationship is purified and made righteous before him because of the spiritual reality that he demonstrates to us. So because of that, because of what Jesus has done and because of the indwelling of his Spirit, the new man absolutely is made for monogamy. And the new man is not going to be happy in the lifestyle of the old man, right?
Again, I go back to your 12 or 13-year-old experience. Were you mad at God about how you were feeling versus what you thought you should do? And did you think God might be mad at you and angry with you because of how you were questioning him.
Oh, absolutely. So, and again, that really fed into my reasons for pulling away. And, you know, this is just something that I found true in myself and many of the people that I counsel. We tend to think of ourselves as highly intellectual people, meaning that we make decisions based on rationale and reason. But that's just not true. We make decisions based on convenience and what feels right. And so for me, it felt as though what I was doing was very, very fun and very profitable for me. And in the moment it is, just like a kid who indulges in massive amounts of sugar on Halloween night feels like what he's doing is profitable for him until the next day. So it felt very right for me. I didn't think about the long-term consequences. And then Satan is able to slip in there. That's why the name devil literally means accuser. That's what he does. He separates us from God by utilizing our sin as the separator, the barrier between us and God. And he helps us to, and this is a negative helping, right? He helps us to ignore the price that Jesus has paid for us on the cross and just say, like, you're condemned. God doesn't want anything to do with you because of this behavior. So people in our day and age have two ways of dealing with this type of guilt. They either do what I did, which is where they leave God and they develop their own morality apart from him and say, well, I'm not condemned because I don't believe in this type of moral or ethical structure, or they try to incorporate God into their depravity, where they say, well, I believe in a God who is above these kind of petty, you know, archaic sexual ethics. I believe in a God who's a little bit more liberated, progressive, a little bit more ideologically fluid, you know, and so because of that, I don't believe in a God who would condemn me for this type of behavior. You know, I believe in a God who's very accepting and loving. Which is kind of missing the point, right? Our God is so accepting and loving that he draws boundaries around what would be harmful and damaging to us. And when we step out of that boundary, he disciplines us to bring us back in line, but he also is quick to forgive.
I would imagine that our listeners, both men and women right now, are jotting down all the questions that they would have. You know, what? Well, my husband's involved with this and my wife doesn't do this and just those kinds of things. So I want people to hold off a little bit. I'd love for you to call. If you want to call Peter, you're welcome to do so. 505-338-5790. Abby will answer the phone and bring you onto the program. But before, and you can call anytime, but I want you to just listen to what Pastor Peter has to say. He's already given us tremendous biblical insight. We're going to talk about some resources that he's even put together. He's got a Bible study called Rooted in Sin, Rescued by Love. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But before we go there, let's talk about the Running Light Ministry at Calvary Christian Fellowship in Tucson. Because I think that Calvary Church Albuquerque needs something like this, and so do a lot of other churches.
Yeah, absolutely. So Running Light was started by my pastor, Bo Ouellette, must have been like 14 years ago. And the whole idea was he wanted to create a ministry that would allow the church as a whole to be able to talk about this issue. So he developed it specifically for other pastors because that's where he was struggling as a pastor with this issue. And he wanted to give them an avenue and an outlet to be able to talk to somebody, to develop a ministry within their own fellowship. And the whole purpose is, we're going to create something where people have the comfortability to talk in an accountability type relationship, which really does draw a very fine line, because some relationships when it comes to this become overly gratuitous and salacious, where you're sharing information and you're delving into your depravity and you're becoming worse, right? You're ruminating on it. You're becoming worse. You're talking to people who may even be in even crazier situations than you, and you're being attracted to different and more depraved lifestyles as a result. So we need to be careful about that, that our communication is biblically grounded, that when we're going to talk about things, we're going to use biblical language. We're not going to utilize worldly language. So if we're going to talk about what we've done, we're going to use the word sin. We're going to use the word immorality. We're going to talk about biological things. We're not going to use, like I said, this type of word that could be arousing to an individual. We're very, very careful about that. And then also confronting the behavior, holding people to account for the things that they have done, but also coming alongside them in a loving and affirming manner. So the two are not contradictory, as some people think. They're like, you know, if you're affirming, you can't be contradictory. And if you're contradictory, you can't be affirming. That's not true. God contradicts our sin, but he loves us very much and he affirms us.
I feel like I need to skip down the list and ask you why confession of sin is so important.
Mm. Yeah, no, very, very good question. So when you look at the Bible, confession is rooted all throughout it, right? You have in Leviticus chapter 5, when the Israelites would go to the temple to do their sin offerings, they would have to confess over their sacrifice before they slaughtered it. And the whole reason is because when we confess, we are relational beings. And when you're stuck in your own mind, then you really only have your own perspective to guide you. And unfortunately, that could be very detrimental to us. So when we confess, we're opening ourselves up to a different perspective. We're saying, hey, this is the way I think. This is the way I'm doing things. I know intellectually that it's wrong, but I need a little bit more information. You can talk to someone who's a little bit further down the road than you that can contradict some of the ways that you're thinking, that can help you out. This is James chapter 5, verse 16. Confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. Right? Confession should be a part of the Christian life. And beyond that, when confession is not a part of the church, it creates a false paradigm in which people who attend church believe this is a place for people who have it together, and there really is no help for people who stumble along the way, where church is not designed that way.
Are there things you can't be forgiven for?
No. No, the Bible's very clear about that. There's nothing that you can't be forgiven for. Now, that doesn't mean that your relationships will survive your depravity, but your relationship with God will. So there are times where I'll be counseling a couple and the wife will or the husband will say, hey, I really hope you find peace with God and what's going on. But the trust has been irrevocably broken in our relationship. And that's the end of it. And that's OK. Right. I always counsel them that that's OK. Right. If this level of deception, this level of manipulation and just disturbing behavior has taken place, it is OK to have it in your mind as saying, like, I don't know how we could see our way back from here. I always encourage people to be patient, right? Don't just jump to divorce. But if you go down it and you say, like, I want them to find help, but it's just not going to be with me, that's okay. So your relationships might not survive it, but your relationship with God always will.
So we should probably back up and say, how does a so-called hidden sin take over a person's life?
Yeah, so basically, the reasons why hidden sin becomes the most destructive is, number one, it stays resident within your own brain and your own thought process. So because of that, like I said, you don't have any contradictory words being spoken into you. And in that place, it's very easy for Satan to slip in and to try to justify the behavior and convince you, well, you're not really doing anything wrong. It's not that big of a deal. It's secret. Oh, if you told anyone, it would just hurt them. Let's work on this by ourselves, that kind of thing. That type of narrative is going to be very destructive for you, and it's going to cause the sin to grow exponentially. You know, my pastor once said, you know, sin is like a fungus. The more you keep it in the dark, the bigger it grows. Beyond that, the hidden sin is very detrimental because in order to keep it hidden, you must lie. And in all the couples that I've counseled, you have to either – it's a lie of omission or it's flat-out manipulation and lying. When I counsel couples, I'll tell you – it's much easier, this is going to sound weird, it's much easier to forgive the sexual immorality than it is to forgive the deception. The basis for all healthy relationships is trust. I have to be able to trust you when you tell me I love you, I care about you, I'm committed to you. When those cracks begin to form in the trust of a relationship, it's very hard to trust anything. You're like, can I trust anything that you've said to me? And it erodes the intimacy within any relationship.
Peter Martin is an associate pastor at Calvary Christian Fellowship in Tucson, Arizona. He teaches about issues of Christianity, sexuality, trauma, and hope. He's going to be with us till 2 o'clock. I hope you'll stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Adam Holtz, and you're listening to Plugged In.
Why do you want to be a samurai?
I lived in a bad part of town full of bad dogs. Everybody always picked on me.
In the new movie Paws of Fury, The Legend of Hank, now in theaters, the world hasn't gone to the dogs. Instead, it's gone to the cats. A conniving cat ruler needs an excuse to bulldoze an ugly village outside his town. And his plot for getting rid of the place involves sending in a dog to be the town's next leader. Kitty litter humor fills this script, along with pratfalls and plays on profanity. And there's a suggestive scene as well. That said, the story also warns against stereotyping others. So we're giving Paws of Fury, The Legend of Hank, a 3.5 out of 5 for family friendliness. Read the full review at PluggedIn.com/radio. And be sure to check us out on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Adam Holtz for Focus on the Family's Plugged In Movie Review.
Is your personal Bible study time frustrating? Do you need direction? You can study the Bible with a plan and see progress. Listen to this from Skip Heitzig.
All of us, we have trouble with certain parts of the Bible. Sometimes it's tough. But exposure to the Bible, a consistent exposure to the Bible, and I would add on a daily basis, with a consistent desire to obey it, will do more for you than any other thing that I can think of in your Christian walk.
Take the mystery out of studying Scripture with Pastor Skip's book, How to Study the Bible and Enjoy It. Our thanks to you when you give $25 or more to help connect more people with this Bible teaching ministry. Get the tips and tools you need to open your eyes, mind, and heart to God's truth.
You don't have to be afraid of the Bible.
Get your copy of How to Study the Bible and Enjoy It by Skip Heitzig today when you give online securely at connectwithskip.com/offer or call 800-922-1888.
Biblical Insights from Harvest with Pastor Greg Laurie.
Let me give you a little bit of advice. Tell those you love that you love them. Don't wait. Don't say, well, they know. I'm sure they know. But it never hurts to have someone say, I love you. They can't read your mind. Say it. Just stop what you're doing. Think about people you love. Your parents, your children, your siblings, someone that's meant a lot to you. Send them a text. Send them an email. Even better, write it on a card. You know why it's cool to write it on a card? Because they can keep it. And they can pull it out. Just say, I just wanted to take a moment to say, I appreciate you and I love you. Thank you for all that you've done for me.
Impact your world with the gospel by knowing God and making Him known. Connect with Pastor Greg Laurie and sign up to receive his free daily devotion emails. To get started, visit harvest.org today.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. Join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
Pastor Peter Martin is the author of Rooted in Sin, Rescued by Love, and a second book called The Fellowship of Suffering. He teaches about issues of Christianity, sexuality, trauma, and hope. And, of course, so far today we've been talking about sexual sin. We're talking to those other people, not us Christians. Of course, I'm saying that tongue in cheek. This is a common thing among Christians as well, isn't it, Peter?
Yeah, absolutely. So, prior to a lot of the internet development, these stats were about 50-50. So for men, about 50% of men, even attending conferences like the Promise Keepers, admitted to viewing porn that week. It was about one third of women. Now those stats are going far higher. I couldn't tell you the last time I talked to a younger person that was being honest with me that had not at least been viewing it. There are varieties of what I mean by that. Some people are saying like, well, yeah, I viewed it a couple times, but I haven't gone back. Or yeah, I regularly view it, but it's very rare to run into someone who doesn't at least have an experience with it, that they've clicked on it once by accident and gone back for curiosity's sake. And with the younger generation, you got to realize that pornography is the least of their concerns. That may sound weird, but when you understand what's out there nowadays, pornography is actually less invasive and less terrible than some of these apps that allow them to be interactive. I'm talking about sites where they could actually pay webcam models to strip for them. They develop relationships with these people through giving them money and through chatting with them. I'm talking about going on various dating apps and websites like that where they're able to communicate with people around the country, date multiple people at the same time, and exchange nude photos with them. You know, that makes it far more dangerous as well, because not only are you engaging in a highly sexual type of relationship with a stranger, but you're also exposing yourself to someone you know nothing about. So pornography is bad, but these kind of behaviors are actually far more dangerous, in my opinion.
All of this seems like it's designed to entrap you. So I guess my question is, why is our culture leading people to be sexualized? Is it a money thing?
So, you know, the more optimistic point of my brain would point back to guys like Sigmund Freud and Alfred Kinsey, who actually believed that the bulk of the world's ills are due to sexual repression. And the only way for people to become free and incorporated with their reality and more peaceful is if they were able to express their sexuality young, right? So Alfred Kinsey was a huge believer that kids should be sexualized as early as possible. Even toddlers should be sexualized. He believed that we were intrinsically sexual people and that this would make everything better. And there are a lot of people in our culture that have bought into his worldview and really genuinely believe that. They think that the Judeo-Christian sexual ethics that prevent people from being able to act out in whatever way they want is what's causing the world's ills. They believe that angry, young, violent people are people who just aren't able to express themselves sexually the way that they want to. They believe that it's the root of all type of insecurities, depression, suicidal ideation. They think it's all rooted in this idea of sexual repression. This is why if you haven't understood it when you're watching the news and people are saying, you know, when you call out these sexual behaviors, you are threatening their lives. You might say, like, what the heck are you talking about? Like, I'm not threatening their lives. I'm just pointing out the fact that I don't agree with the behavior. In their mind, there is no difference. Because if you cause someone to repress their sexual selves, you're causing them to doubt their internal autonomy, and therefore they'll doubt their significance and commit suicide. So that's the idea.
How did you word it earlier when you talked about the mind being controlled by the body?
Yeah. So what we have, and different philosophers have looked at it this way, you have what's called the base desires. These are your appetites. So food, sex, and economic prosperity, basically. Those are your kind of animalistic desires. These things need to be subordinated to the mind, to the higher desires, that you recognize sex is good, but a loving, caring, committed relationship that's exclusive is much better. So I have to subordinate my animalistic appetites to the higher desire of wanting to become more complete and integrated with my society as a whole. A good example of this is eating habits. Right. So I have my base desires that just want to eat garbage all the time. Right. If I just listen to my appetites, I'd live on a diet of burgers, pizza and ice cream, you know, and I would be a very sorry specimen and I'd probably die before I became 40. What I have to do is learn how to subordinate those base appetites to my higher desires, which would be my desires for health and longevity of life and care for others. Right. These things become more important to me. But if I'm not intentional about that, my base desires, my appetites run the show, right? My God is my belly, as the Apostle Paul put it in Philippians chapter 3. So when you're exposed to certain things, especially sexuality young, as a kid, the average exposure to pornography is 8 now. You know, and that when I say porn, I'm talking about, again, live action motion picture video of sex, right? You are too young to understand your sexual desires at that age. And because of that, you are already altering the way you think about things to be from the body to the mind as opposed to the other way around. I mean, what hope do you have for someone who's growing up that way, listening to the cues of their bodies and never being able to understand the higher callings of commitment and marriage? What hope do they have of learning that lesson years later after they've let the body run the show? That's why if you talk to many young people and you say, do you want to get married one day? Most of them will say yes. If you try to show them that their sexual behaviors are not congruent with a monogamous relationship that bears family and children, they're not going to understand why that's a problem. And when you look at Generation Z and even my generation, millennials, you see that their rates of marriage, their rates of divorce, their rates of having kids are abysmal, right? They're terrible. And they don't see that one does follow the other. You cannot be sexually promiscuous and let your body run the show and expect one day to wake up and say, oh, no, wait, I want these really important things. And I'm all of a sudden going to subordinate these desires I've been feeding for over a decade.
I can't help but think about training physically, weightlifting, running,
yeah,
all the things that we do to keep our bodies healthy. And this is kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
But you've got to train your mind.
Exactly.
And you have to renew your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that in the Word of God.
Absolutely. And, you know, just using that example, I mean, the percentage of people who grow up in very unhealthy households, right? People who grow up with parents that just feed them whatever they want and they never encourage physical activity or athleticism, their odds of becoming healthy later on in life are incredibly diminished, almost non-existent. That's just for food, right? That's just for food. Think about your sexuality. Right. How difficult is it to subordinate those desires? How much will does it take to be able to fight it? And how long does it take to learn how to develop those habits of the mind and the will. Very, very difficult things to do. So yeah, if you grow up in a society that never trains you and teaches you how to do that, it's difficult for you. So as Christians, we need to recognize the Bible does teach us how to do these things, but in church, are we talking about them? Because we have the resources, but do people know we have the resources?
Why do rules against doing certain things not work? In other words, if you make some rules for, as you're, and I'm thinking about parents right now. Oh yeah, you guys, you have, I don't want you to have sex till you're married. Okay, well, they might be saying that because that's kind of a biblical viewpoint.
Right.
But the Bible's not really setting a rule. It's talking about your heart.
Right.
And I think Paul said in Romans 7, he talks about the rule giving opportunity for the sin.
Yeah, no, and that is a very important point that most Christians don't understand or develop in their own spiritual worldview. So the role of fear, right, the role of fear really only works for people who are toddler age. Once you become more intelligent, the thing that motivates you primarily are desires, right? So not fear, but desires for something. So if I'm dealing with, right now I have a toddler, right? I have a 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to explain to her the better desires in life. All I'm going to be able to explain to her is if you do this wrong thing, this consequence occurs inside of your life. Once you get to a particular age, consequences no longer hold much sway over you. It's not that they're completely ineffective, but they're pretty much ineffective. They don't really work very well. And most parents will recognize that. Once you get to a teenage year, giving rules to them are just giving them fodder to figure out new and more experiential ways and interesting ways to violate the rules that you've set out for them. The only thing that motivates teenagers at that stage of human existence is, again, better desires. So if you talk to kids who are focused on finishing high school, focused on not using drugs, focused on not having sex outside of marriage, you're never going to hear those kids who actually have a firm direction in life and are holding to it. You're not going to hear them say, well, I'm afraid of disappointing my parents. That may be a facet, but it's not going to be their primary motivating factor. They're going to say something like, well, I have hopes of having a successful career one day. I'm motivated to join this college. I'm motivated to earn this scholarship through track or something like that. And I recognize that this behavior won't allow me to do it. The higher passion is what trumps the lower passions. So as Christians, you're never going to get far just trying to make people afraid of sexual sin. Paul in 2 Corinthians 5, he says, the love of Christ motivates us. So the idea is my passion for God and my desire to please him and live a life underneath him, is that what's motivating me? Or is it fear of hell and torture? So Colossians 2, Paul just lays it out. He says, some have this really foolish mindset. He says, do not taste, do not touch, do not handle, which all concern things of the flesh and have the appearance of wisdom and self-imposed religion, but are of no value against the indulgences of the flesh. So he flat out says it. Just setting rules has no value against the indulgence of the flesh.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. We're with pastor and author Peter Martin. He works with Calvary Christian Fellowship in Tucson, Arizona, up here in Albuquerque for a family wedding, and we're blessed to have him here with us. Unfortunately, we only have 15 minutes left, so I hope you'll stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
Don Chitwood of Southern Boulevard Automotive.
I have towed many vehicles in for repair, with the customer stating the car just stalled while I was driving. After diagnosing it, I've had to make that phone call many times and state to the customer, you're out of gas and you need to refuel. Many Christians are like that. They need to be refueling daily with God's word in order to keep themselves moving forward and to have the mind of Christ. Dwight L. Moody was once asked why he urged Christians to be filled constantly with the Holy Spirit. He replied, I need continuous infilling because I leak. What gauge do you use in your life to know if you're running on empty of the infilling of God's Spirit?
Southern Boulevard Automotive, 2300 Southern Boulevard in Rio Rancho, 892-2300 or southernblvdautomotive.com. Thank you, John Chitwood at Southern Boulevard Automotive, for your support of KLYT 88.3 FM.
Personal or small group Bible study is a great way to learn God's Word. But what if you want to learn more, go deeper?
Calvary College offers classes in biblical studies, classes like Old Testament Survey. Immerse yourself in the entire Old Testament from Genesis to Malachi. Take the evening classes on campus or anytime classes online. An education from Calvary College will impact your spiritual life for the rest of your life. Apply now at calvarychurchcollege.com.
This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams. Join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
Pastor Peter Martin is an associate pastor at Calvary Christian Fellowship in Tucson, Arizona, with Scott Richards. He's the author of Rooted in Sin, Rescued by Love, and the Fellowship of Suffering. He teaches about issues of Christianity, sexuality, trauma, and hope. If you want to talk to Peter, you're welcome to call us at 505-338-5790. A lot of times, Peter, when I have these kind of tough subjects, people like to just listen and take notes. I know they're going to want to get a hold of your books, and I want to give you a chance now because we may run out of time later. Let's talk about Rooted in Sin, Rescued by Love. That's a Bible study, mm-hmm. and kind of an outline for people to go through in a group.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So I developed this. We have various workbooks that are more focused primarily on the sexual issue. What I realized in our ministry is that we didn't have any literature that was for not only the people going through this particular issue, but for spouses as well. So what I wanted to do is just take a step back and look at sin as a whole, how it affects us and how it integrates itself inside of our lives and the methodologies that we use to get a measure of freedom and traction in our relationship with God. So that's the purpose of that book. It's one that husbands and wives could go through together. A lot of the questions that I have in the workbook are built out of, they've grown out of conversations I've had with my wife over the years, which is really cool. So hopefully it will give people a very good understanding of how sin works. And again, the ways and the methodologies that they can incorporate God and the resources he's given us to grow in their sanctification.
A little earlier, you talked about couples and mm-hmm. you talked about maybe a relationship wouldn't endure the depravity of the sin.
Mm-hmm.
But you've also seen it endure.
Yeah.
And you've seen relationships restored.
Yeah.
And you've had that experience yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that there's wives in particular. I know that wives in some degree, women in some degree are, you know, included in sexual sin, but I think it's still more prevalent in men. That would just be my own view. And so I guess there are people that have been really traumatized by this. You know, their husbands are involved in this or that. I think I mentioned to you before the program started, I've even had Christian friends who have been involved in prostitution and other kinds of things. And,
yeah.
Adultery, you know, the gamut. And a lot of those men have been repentant and kept their marriages together and seem to be doing well. But, I guess I want to ask you now, can we escape temptation and not sin as the Bible says we can, you know, not succumb, but we have to escape when the temptation comes, not when the sin comes.
Yeah, and that's a really, really good question on two fronts. So the first one is the idea of escaping temptation. Usually when I talk to people about this issue, their view of freedom is, I will no longer be tempted by this. That is something that the Bible does not promise, ever. Even Jesus succumbed to temptation. By succumbing to temptation, by the way, I don't mean that he actually engaged in sin. But I mean that he struggled against the wills of the flesh. This is what happens to him in the Garden of Gethsemane, as well as his 40 days in the wilderness, right? He actually endured sin. He knows what it's like to have to fight that off. So there is no promise in the scriptures that we're going to be free of it. And I think that some people in the body don't know that temptation is the norm of the Christian faith. So they have these temptations to engage in sexual sin, and we live in this weird culture that believes that all will is representative of your true and inner self, meaning that when people struggle with various things like, you know, same-sex relationships and things like that, they think, oh, that's my true self. That's who I really am. And I can push it down. I could suppress it, but eventually it'll keep coming back up. But what we've figured out is that that's just not true. That's not representative of your true self. That's just representative of your base desires. And those can and should be fought. So we continue to fight them and we can get better and better at combating the wills and desires of the flesh. They're never going to go away, but we can get more and more adept at fighting them off. Just like someone who trains in sports or someone who trains in any type of physical combative sport, it's not like that you would expect that the tension would go away, because if the tension goes away, then you're no longer working. But it does mean that you'll become better at dealing with the tension and overcoming it.
When you say we, you're just not talking about your own battles and the battles of our listeners, but you're talking about community.
Mm-hmm.
And your second book, The Fellowship of Suffering, Finding Healing from Trauma Through the Power of Community, is addressing exactly that issue.
Absolutely. So, you know, I go over many examples within that book, but one of my favorites is actually the Rat Park experiment. So I'm not going to bore you with all the details, but basically they were trying to figure out what drives addiction. So they allowed rodents access to various narcotics, and in all circumstances, the rodents would commit suicide. They would overdose and die. So they're like, oh man, like, you know, substances are so bad that once you touch that thing, you're done. You know, it's going to rewire your brain, you're toast. But then this guy named Alexander, Dr. Alexander, he redid the experiment with allowing the rodents to have community, and he called it Rat Park. And the Rat Park, the rodents would very rarely, if ever, touch the narcotics. And if they did, they would never go back. So then he would addict rodents to the narcotics, then introduce them into the Rat Park. And in all circumstances, they would willingly go through withdrawals and sober up in order to be a part of that community. We are communal creatures. And if you feel that isolation and separation from your local community, and you don't have any type of connection around you, drugs are a very viable option for you, and these type of impersonal types of pleasure, which is what pornography incorporates. So, you know, if you're finding this type of pleasure within pornography, that's not necessarily representative of the fact that you're just this totally depraved and sinful, wicked, disordered individual. But it does point to the fact that you have some sort of a desire for intimacy that you're trying to meet in a really disordered way. And if you can't find that type of interpersonal community that we were built for, designed for, that God actually developed his church around, you're never going to have the resources necessary to get free. As a counselor, I always tell people, how many people in your close circle know about the things that you're talking to me about? And oftentimes people say, well, no one. I'm like, well, then I'm not really going to be able to provide you what you're looking for, right? I could give you some biblical answers. I could give you some different types of exercises that you could go through. But what is really going to fix you, what's really going to help you, is incorporating your issues with your community at large. And that's really one of the definitions you can give for a community. It's the group of people that you weep with and rejoice with, right? It's the group of people that you feel most comfortable expressing all seasons and walks of life with, that you can laugh with them and you can cry with them. And most people, you have very fair weather friends. You can laugh with them, but when you're crying, the last thing you feel comfortable doing is going to those friends and expressing your sorrow, your hurt, and your issues, and feeling that genuine community, restitution, and comfort that should come from it. So this is very true when it comes to issues of sexual morality, addiction recovery, but it's also true when it comes to trauma recovery. So what I recognize as a veteran is getting out of the military, where I had this really integrated community that was built up for me through the military services, coming out of that and going to church and going into my local communities and realizing, wow, like, that doesn't really exist in this country. You know, that level of just being with each other all the time, knowing everything that's going on in each other's lives and encouraging one another and walking through things with one another, that's just something that's not very present in our country. And I believe that the degrading amounts of mental health happening in our country are really representative of that lack.
Peter, I think that there's going to be people that listen to the podcast of this interview. They're not necessarily listening right now, but one of our listeners is going to send it to somebody that is not a person that's involved in church.
Mm.
And that person is going to say, well, yeah, there's some logic to what Peter just said, but I don't like church.
Mm.
They don't, and they resist community for some reason. And I don't know if this is a fair analogy, but most of the people I was involved in athletics with, we had community on our teams. You know, we all knew what each one was going through.
Right.
You have to, because you're going through these daily battles. That was true in high school. Right. That was true for me in college.
Right.
I think people that were in the band had the same kind of experience. People that were in, you know, social groups on campus of any kind, they had that. Why, when we get away from that, do we resist church so much? Is it the fault of the churches, or is it the fault of the people just not wanting to be part of it?
Yeah, no, it's a very, very good question. So the big part, you know, when you're describing those things, I hope people will see the pattern in what you're describing. All those people groups that you're describing have a purpose. They have a reason for being there. They have a shared goal and vision. And the question is when you go to church, do you have a shared goal and vision with the people you attend with? Or are you there just to simply get some sort of an intellectual fulfilling or some sort of a show, right? Some sort of a worship ceremony that makes you feel good about yourself. You know, when you're integrating in a football team or in my perspective, going to war, you need to work with those people because you are doing something. You are fighting against something that is real, that is present, and that does dictate the way that you live and you treat your life. But if you're going to church and you don't see any connection in what you're trying to accomplish between the people you attend with, you're probably not going to integrate yourself with them. As Christians, we got to understand, and we have to, I hope, and I do see our country really waking up to the fact that we have allowed, as the church, all the institutions of our country to be taken over to people by people who are antagonistic towards our worldview and our belief systems. And the reason why that's happened is because the church has ceased to be mission-oriented, right? We have evangelists, we have people going out, that's great. But what role does the church have in your mission as being a husband, a father, as being a mother, as being a wife, as being a child, as being someone who attends college and school? Do you see yourself as being in antagonistic type of circumstances, going against the world and moving forward together? And do you feel a need for the support that the church represents?
Peter, I only have another 2 hours worth of questions to ask you, so I hope that you'll be willing to, even if we have to get you on the phone, I so much appreciate your time today.
Yeah, no, I love being here, man.
All right, God bless you, my friend.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.